There are tests, perhaps you've taken them, that reduce your personality to a number, a one-word description, or a series of letters. Some say they've helped match the right person to the right job, even helped a person do their job better. Others question whether personality is so simple that it fits in such a box. I'm Brian Ellis, and today on Central Standard, we'll talk about personality tests, how they work, how they can help, and whether earning that INFP label tends to lead people to change their lives or live into them. Then later, we meet two developers of apps for mobile devices based right here in the metro. They'll give us a professional glimpse into that exploding corner of the tech industry and point us to some of the best new apps out there today. We get into your phone and into your head on Central Standard after the news. In certain professions, it's hard to go more than a week or two without someone bringing up their Myers-Briggs personality characteristics. Extrovert or introvert, thinking or feeling. There's even a Facebook meme going around right now that can inform you that Harry Potter was an ISTP while Dumbledore was an ENFJ. But what do those labels and the ones that come from dozens of other tests out there really mean? And is knowing our personality types helping us live happier lives or holding us back? Good morning. Welcome to Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. Later this hour, we'll take a look at local developers of apps for mobile devices, and we'll hear about that burgeoning business here in Kansas City. But first, personality and personality tests. Joining us to help us decode the results and the purpose of all this is Dr. Jared Locke. He's an industrial and organizational psychologist, consults with companies, runs a group that specializes in assessments. Welcome to you, Jared.
Thank you, Brian. It's nice to be here.
It's great to have you. So let's start with your job. What is an industrial and organizational psychologist anyway?
Well, basically what we do is we take the concept of understanding humans and human behavior, and we translate it instead of from the personal life to the business world. And so we help organizations hire the right people, put them in the right positions, really set them up for success and help them understand what kind of energy is needed for this person to be successful in this role, in this company, and in this job.
All right. Well, it sounds like you're the right guy for this topic, at least for the way that a lot of people use these personality tests. And am I actually using the right term? Do you think of this as a personality test?
There's a huge industry in the assessment industry. There's 2,600 test publishers in the United States alone. And so there's a lot of different ways people are trying to measure things. But for today's discussion, I think the concept of personality is appropriate, yes.
So what are they really measuring? When we say that you're testing someone's personality, what is the set of information that they're providing? Is it a test of who someone is or who they can be or who they want to be? What is it?
It depends on how the person has developed the assessment. And really, there's two different ways that we have developed these assessments over the years. The first one is basically a theoretical model. And that theoretical model is what a lot of you know, the Myers-Briggs, the DISC, things of that nature, where the author of that assessment has a theory or they have a focus and they want people to understand those kinds of discussions. And so in that regard, what we're really looking at is people's ability to have conversations with each other. Are they really predictive? Are they doing the deep, dark kind of whole truth of who a person is? Maybe not. There's the statistical and scientific approach to this as well, which is trying to measure the whole person or what that person brings to the table. And there's a little bit more research behind those, a little bit more work behind that. And in those regards, what it is trying to measure is stable traits, stable characteristics that will reoccur over time.
So give me an example of some of those kinds of tests. You said we've all heard of the Myers-Briggs and some like that. What is a statistical test?
Well, some of the more scientific approaches to assessments, basically as psychology has burgeoned as a economic endeavor, there's been a lot of people who have created their own assessments and tests, and many of those are lists. But around the 80s, there was a group of researchers that said, hey, let's take a look at all these tests. Let's pull them together. And basically, they came up with what's called the five-factor model of personality. And this five-factor model says that regardless of test, regardless of what you're looking at, you can describe people in terms of five broad characteristics. There's several different different assessments out there of those characteristics. The OPQ is one. The NEO is another. The folks over at Hogan do a pretty good job of measuring these assessments as well.
But these are all sort of proprietary. A company runs each of these assessments, and that's how it determines where people rank.
Yeah, well, the assessment industry is a $15 billion industry. Like
wow.
I said, there's a lot of money on the line, which is why one of the difficulties people have with this industry is that there's is that each of these psychologists or each of these people who've created an assessment have a vested interest in saying, mine's different, mine's unique, mine's so much more better than other people's. It'll describe people differently. And what we have to really do is sift through that as a consumer and try and figure out the right way to use these assessments and use them in the work, in both the workplace and for personal lives.
Well, and do you think that makes it risky? I mean, one of the criticisms that a lot of people have of these assessment tools is that they are profit driven, that that they are being used so that companies can make more money in the long run. That may or may not get to the truth of what a person's real personality or real being is about.
I do think that there's some problems there, and there's a few issues, and there's two or three things there. One, once a psychologist puts his name in the ring and tries to be a business person and sell their assessment, all of a sudden that assessment becomes the magic bullet, and everything, and they assume that it should be good for everything and used everywhere. So they're used inappropriately in a lot of scenarios. On the other side, there are some good people out there that will research assessments for you, take a look at those assessments. That's one of the things my company tries to do is do the background for you, look through the research, figure out which of these assessments actually will work and do the things you need them to do, and then apply them appropriately in the workplace.
When did all this start? I mean, there was a time that people managed to hire people for jobs without knowing if they were an INFJ or an ESTP.
Well, people have been using their gut for years, and right now, the divorce rate is something like 50%. So
okay.
We can see where gut feel can get us from time to time. But the real push for use of assessments was in the United States was actually started right before World War II with the OSS, and that's which was a precursor to the CIA. And that was the first group of people who actually said, let's take a look at people. Let's take a look at their characteristics, and let's see if we can predict who the best spies are. And so, early in the world, assessment had a real job to do, and that was to predict real world performance. And after World War II, it was understood that there was that we were very good at predicting who was going to be good spies. Our spies really helped us win that war. And then those psychologists that were pulled together for the war effort broke off over to Harvard and Berkeley, and then those two areas started the concept of we can start using this for employers and employment purposes.
Yeah, let's bring this forward to the present day. You work with a company called Convergence, as well as running the JDL group. These are groups that use assessment tools like this, work with companies. I guess I'm curious, give us an example of how you might use these personality tests today. What kind of company hires you, and what do you start with, and how do you put this test to work?
Right. Well, at Convergent, we're all about change management. And what we're trying to do is really help organizations understand that virtually anything they're doing is a change process. If we're trying to hire better salespeople or start having a proactive customer service department or hire people that have a little bit more vision or hire people that fit our culture, those are all changes. And so at Convergent, what we try to do is define where you're coming from and where are you going
to. So how does the personality test come into that?
Once we define where we're coming from and where we're going to, we pull together an assessment battery that will help us predict those areas that are important for that organization, and then we administer those and start giving them feedback off of that. Assessment has a job to do, and that's to facilitate future processes, and that's one of the difficulties people have is that they think, let's use assessments just to use them, and they're an end-all, be-all, but in a selection process, we will use an assessment to drive interview behavior. In a leadership development process, we will use the assessment to inform that person so that they can then focus in and hone in on the areas that they need to develop or work on. Change management process, it's basically here's where your characteristics are leading you down the northeast route, and we need you to really move down the northwest route instead.
So if these tests are determining whether someone gets a job or not, do you become concerned that people may try to match their personality to what they think the test is looking for?
Right. Well, there's 15,000 human behaviors, right? And there's a lot
different
different combinations. And as people try to take these assessments, we have really good data on it that suggests those first 7 or 8 questions really take about 10 or 12% of the time, because the person is trying to figure out what's the context, what are they asking, why do they want this. But it's really hard for a person to say, okay, I'm applying for a customer service job, and this company is looking for this, but here's how I really am. So how do I really want to respond? And after that first 8 or 9 questions, what you find is people will start giving you a free flow answers, because quite frankly, it would take them way too long, and it gets a little bit confusing.
So besides the benefits for an employer who might be trying to hire a certain kind of person for a certain kind of job, do you think there are benefits to the individuals who take these tests, even when they're not looking for a job? Is there a benefit to knowing more about your own personality?
Absolutely. And I think that it's important to use these in personal settings as well, which has a lot to do. I know in the religious world, there's a lot of times we use these assessments pre-marriage to help conversations start. And again, those types of assessments in a lot of those scenarios are much more of what I'd call the labeling or the theoretical assessments. And they're perfectly good for that. Let's get a conversation started between two different people. Let's talk about what their similarities are or differences. They're very well used in career counseling and in career development as well. There's a multitude of things there, but it's just really good to know thyself and understand from that, what am I going to do with that and how do I approach this world that's in front of me?
Well, let's ask our listeners, do you know your personality type, whether it be the Myers-Briggs rating or some other test? What have you done with that information? Do you think a personality test has had a positive or even a negative impact on your life? We'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 235-2888. You can also reach us by emailing centralstandard@kcur.org. And there's a lively conversation already happening on the KCUR Facebook page. You can post your comments there, too. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Brian Ellison, and we're talking with Dr. Jared Locke, who is an industrial and organizational psychologist with a lot of expertise on these personality tests and assessments. We have already got some input on Facebook, some interesting comments, in addition to some confessions of personality types. Sarah says she waffles between INTJ and ENTJ. Well, Annie weighs in saying she's an INFJ. But then there's some critical words, too, which I think is interesting. Stephen writes, one thing I learned in college is that self-report personality tests like Myers-Briggs tend to skew to how people wish to perceive themselves and not necessarily how they actually are. Is that true?
I think Stephen has a good point there. And the thoughts that I have is that the well-validated assessments out there are not really looking at what you think of yourself, but they're looking at what other people are likely saying about you. And any of us who've been through high school know that we have reputations. They're easy to get and they're hard to shake. Why? Because the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. So a lot of those statistical and scientific assessments that I talked about, what they do is they have collected and gathered databases of several hundred thousand people who have both taken the assessment. And so why they took the assessment or why they skewed them or what they said about themselves, I'm not sure. But we then have job performance data on them, whether it's an employer evaluation or subordinate evaluation or a 360 or objective data. And by merging those data across several hundred thousand people, I'm not sure why the person answered the way they took the assessment. And I'm not really too concerned about that, because I can look at that person's response pattern and I can say with about a 95% accuracy rate, when people answer like you, here's the 5 or 6 things people consistently say about people like that. And if we're worrying about observer ratings versus self-thought, now all of a sudden we can have a much better conversation.
I wonder too, though, if knowing certain elements of your personality type actually then changes the way you act as a result of knowing it, either by resisting it, by trying not to be so darn introverted, for example, or by actually just sort of throwing your hands up and saying, well, I guess I'm going to be the kind of person who runs over people without regard to their feelings anyway, so I might as well just go ahead and do it.
Right. And everything that you're talking about takes energy and time, okay? And so what a nice, well-validated assessment will do is it will say, consistently across time, here's the 4 or 5 ways you will typically respond to social situations. Now you have a choice, and you have a choice to either work with that, try to work against that, or do something different. And with time and effort and work, you can do that. Think of handedness. I'm right-handed, but if I tried to write left-handed, at first it would be bulky. I wouldn't be very good at it, but I could get better at it over time. The problem is there's this funny thing in the world called stress. And when stress comes up, we tend to forget those learned behaviors or those other ways, and we tend to go back to our natural habits. So if I'm a yeller and screamer, I may become socially sensitive in a lot of situations. But when something hits the fan, all of a sudden now I might start reacting the same way I used to react.
So the personality test is getting at kind of the real you.
Hopefully the core you, yes.
Let's take a call from Kate in Kansas City, Missouri. Kate, welcome to Central Standard.
Hello.
I understand you've had a negative experience with a test like this.
I did. I did a application to a local company, very well known, through a recruiter. I went through many levels, did not have a face-to-face interview yet, was about to, was sent through an email, a personalized type of test that you're discussing, was then abruptly told that I was no longer being considered. And the only reason that I was given any feedback about my test results was because I knew the recruiter. So for me, I had a negative experience because I was not given any feedback, so I was not able to experience any of the positive aspects that your guest is relaying.
Appreciate.
And I have many other, and just last thing is that I have many other friends who have also experienced that.
Yeah,
so I don't think that that's a very positive thing.
I appreciate that, Kate. Let's see what Jared Locke has to say about your experiences like yours. Surely Kate is not alone.
No, I don't think Kate's alone, and I would, in a lot of scenarios, agree with her, and I'm sorry you had that experience. One of the things we talk to about our clients when they're using assessments for pre-employment is, how do you use them? How do you describe them to the person who is using it? What are you going to do with the results afterwards? And what is your, how do you want to be perceived? We had a bank, for instance, that we were working with, and this bank said, we're going to use the test, and if they don't pass, they go away. And we say to this bank, well, you're testing 77,000 people a year, and at some point in time, some of those people could be customers. Is that how you want to treat your customers? Is that what you want them to look at? Because the reflection is bad on the organization. Now, the other part of this is that sometimes recruiters, they have a bias towards trying to put the person into the position. And if the person, and if they like the person, and the company thinks they like the person, then all of a sudden now the personality assessment is put in a position of being the bad guy. Mm-hmm. And that's what seems to have happened here as well. There's probably, and so from my vantage point, I think it's really important for organizations, and we counsel our organizations, to give people feedback off of the assessments and to also realize, or help the person realize, that while they may have gone through many interviews and other things, let's not use the assessment as a sole screen. Let's use it to drive interview behavior. So if Kate had a deficit where they think they wanted something positive, let's have them interview her around that and see what they think. And so that's what I think. And I'm sorry you had that that outcome, Kate.
Kate, thanks for the call. 816-235-2888 is the number to call to be on Central Standard, like Sean in Kansas City, Missouri has done. Sean, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. I would just like to add, it seems that that my experience, in fact, reinforces the discussion. I'm an NF, ENFP. I married my wife, who is an INTJ.
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there, Sean, because we've been throwing these around like everybody knows what they are, but I appreciate it. I'm going to ask Jared, our guest, to give the world's briefest summary of the Myers-Briggs personality types here that he's talking about.
All right. I'll give it my best shot. And that's the difficulty with the Myers-Briggs is people forget what those letters stand for.
Right. And we'll come back to you, Sean. Don't go away.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so basically, Sean, I think you said you were an ENTF, which means that you're more extroverted. That's the E.
He actually said ENFP.
ENFP. Okay, so you're more extroverted, which is the E. You're more intuitive, which is the N. You're more feeling, which is the F. And you're more perceptive, if you will, which is the P. And you said your wife was an ISTJ?
INTJ.
INTJ. So there was an introversion, also an intuitive, which is the one commonality between the two of you. And then she's, though, much more thinking and much more judgmental, a little bit more black and white, I would say.
Right.
All right. And so those four letters in each of their two possible combinations can create 16 different personality types. And so everyone falls into one of these 16 categories. Sean, you met your wife. She's obviously in a very different category than you.
Well, yes, but according to Kinsey, who writes about, you know, the most probably most popular book on the Myers-Briggs, he says that the second letter is the most important. It really controls the way you think, the way you feel, kind of the way you communicate. Of course, correct me if I'm misinterpreting that. But so therefore, he considers actually intuitive thinkers to be great matches with intuitive feelers because they communicate the same, but they complement each other.
Yes.
And so far, after 2.5 years of marriage, I would say, yeah, he was right. Our communication is right on. It's really nice. I guess the only thing to balance that is that I made assumptions based on INTJ. I made some assumptions about her and her personality which were not correct. Whether that was my mistake or Kinsey's description of INTJ, I do not know.
Okay,
of course,
Sean,
these are not, yeah.
Yeah, you've raised a lot of interesting points here. Let's see if they hold up in other people's experiences as well. Jared, he's pointed out, for example, that as the personality types might predict, he and his wife complement each other well, but her personality isn't exactly what it says in the books it should be.
Yeah, no, that's a – Sean, congratulations on your 2.5 years of marriage. And there's a couple of things here. One, the intuitive piece, that's the two of you kind of feeling – having that sensation and that intuition the exact same way. Then your wife is kind of using her brain when she's thinking and you're using your heart. And so the two of those together make a compliment. So on the one side, we're saying similarities attract with the intuition. Then we're saying and differences can work as well. The other thing that's difficult, and this is why I dislike the labeling part of these theoretical assessments, is that we're taking 15,000 human behaviors and we're labeling them with 8 words. Okay, and so Sean's ascribed basically 2,000 words to each of those extroversion or introversion, sensing or intuiting, and that's a difficulty. We're complex beings, and we're complex things that require time and effort to get to know one another. And that's why the labels are both nice to help start conversations, but I certainly wouldn't, stop a conversation there as well.
Sean, I really appreciate you calling in and sharing, even against her wishes, your wife's personality type as well as your own. We appreciate your call. We had a Facebook comment here from Gabriel who says, if you know it's the final thing between you and a job, why not game the system and lie?
Yeah.
If you read certain questions carefully, they tip you off as to what they're about. And obviously, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out what a lot of the questions on these tests are getting at.
Right. No, that's a good point, Gabriel. And most solid assessments will have measures of faking, and we'll have measures of inconsistent responding as well. That said, if you do want to try your hardest to look at something and say, here's what's going on, here's what this company wants, I'm going to call myself extroverted versus introverted, you may be able to do that, okay? There's two or three things that'll stop that. One, we have a bias that assumes that most of the people in the world are like us. And so when we look at an assessment and it says, I'm an ambitious person, and we are ambitious, it's hard to think that anyone in the world would say, I'm not ambitious, okay? And so it's hard for people to answer opposite of who they are because fundamentally they assume or they believe that a lot of people are going to be just like them.
Because
that's the
that's
right way.
Normal.
That's the right way, of course. And the second thing is say you are a stone introvert and you're being asked to be a proactive customer service representative. At some point in time, you're going to have to then start displaying that characteristic. And so why would you want a job that it's asking you to do something that's not natural for your energy. At some point in time, you're going to become somewhat dissatisfied with that job, and I would suggest it's not going to be what you're looking for. My friends call me all the time because, oh, you're a psychologist. Hey, tell me, hey, I'm going to take this assessment. What do you think? And I always say, be yourself. Okay, because if they've done the right work, if they've done the right research up front, they're going to know whether you're going to be a good fit for that job. And I want my friends to have careers, not just a job. In this economy, I know that's hard to say, but it's true in the long run.
Right, that sometimes it's better not to get a job and that a personality test might well help with that.
That's very much true.
Interesting comment actually on my own Facebook page from a friend named Tricia. She says, I think one of the most helpful aspects of some familiarity with personality types is simply to recognize that people are different and that someone who doesn't react like me isn't necessarily strange or wrong, or vice versa.
I think that's a very healthy approach to these things, which is to understand that while we may try to label people or there may be a few words that we use to describe them, in the long run, humans are very, very complex. As I said, 15,000 human behaviors scrambling around in a person, and some of these work one way or the other. If you're ambitious, sometimes you'll railroad people. If you're really easygoing, sometimes you won't confront people. And the beauty is trying to learn and understand those things. And so I think Tricia has a very valid point, and I'm glad she brought it up.
There are other tests. We've been talking a lot about the Myers-Briggs, and you use a few others in your work a lot. What are some of the other sort of leading tests besides the Myers-Briggs that you think are important and indeed valuable?
Right. I mean, on the theoretical side, so let's talk about them. The Myers-Briggs is a good assessment because it starts conversation. The DISC is a fairly decent one there because it starts conversation. The Enneagram or the culture survey, some of those are very easy to understand. They're very easy to use, and they do the label thing. But at the end of the day, they allow conversation to start on a common ground. On the other side, as I said, I think the OPQ, and which is the Occupational Personality Questionnaire, the NEO, which is another measure of the five-factor model. I think the Hogans are doing really good work as well. Brian, where I've gone is I've actually moved beyond just personality because I think that it's important to understand the person's value system, what they care about, what they're motivated by on a day-to-day basis, their positive personality, which is basically what we've covered today, sometimes the negative personality or how a person handles stress and pressure or how they react differently under those scenarios, and also how they solve problems and use their judgment and solve problems and make decisions on a day-to-day basis. I truly believe that pulling all of those together gives you what I'd call a whole picture approach or a full body MRI, if you will, of who the person is and what they bring to the table.
Let's talk to Mary in Overland Park, Kansas. Mary, welcome to Central Standard.
Well, thank you very much. It's been fun listening to this. I just came back from a sister's weekend, and one of my nieces brought just a quick little test they had done in their office at work, and it's the self-test, S-E-L-F. It was something that was available online. So throughout the weekend, we had you know, my sister's nieces from age 12 to 55 take this test. And I love what you said about it started the conversation because it really just did provide some moments of humor, too. You know, someone would take over some activity we were doing, and it's like, well, you know, she's doing that because she's, blank. Or we accused one of my sisters of lying because it was like, you are so not that personality. But on the other side, as you brought up some of the more, maybe the ethics and the values of people, for my fire department, when I lived in Minnesota, I had to take this very lengthy, I cannot recall the name, but it was about 200, 300 items, getting at some of those values and maybe ethics or reactions to things. And I remember getting very nervous about it. And there was one item like, have you ever taken, you know, at least $10 worth of items from your workplace? Well, I'm a teacher, and even though it's like people didn't say, well, here's a supply closet, but make sure you don't take it home, at any moment, I probably have over $10 worth of dry erase markers and pens and pencils. And as you can tell, I'm one that overanalyzes, and I'm taking this test worried.
So you're being too honest.
The one item that came up in different versions, and now I understand they do have to ask question several different ways, was, do you tease your dog? And I'm like, well, yeah, doesn't everybody? Mm-hmm. But, oh, does that mean I'm into animal cruelty?
Right. I remember taking a test like that, Mary, where the question was asked several times in different ways,
oh,
do you
goodness.
Enjoy starting fires? Which I thought, I better not say yes to this question. Mary,
right?
Thank you so much for the call. Quick response to that, Jared?
Well done, Mary, and keep using it at the family picnic and have a good time with it.
All right. I'm sorry we have to leave it there, but this has been a good overview. Perhaps we have, like the test, started a conversation. Dr. Jared Locke is an industrial and organizational psychologist. He consults with companies, runs a group that specializes in assessment. You can find a link to more information about him and about his companies at our website, kcur.org. Jared, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Brian. It's been a pleasure.
After the break, we'll be talking about apps and about work being done right here in Kansas City to create and design and market them. What goes into that, and what does the future hold for the business, and what do these insiders think are some of the best apps out there? Stay with us. I'm Brian Ellison. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR.